from Pacifica Network. This is Democracy Now! Breaking with Convention, War, Peace in the Presidency, the Battle for New York.
For it has been said so truthfully that it is the soldier, not the reporter, who has given us the freedom of the press. It is the soldier, not the poet, who has given us freedom of speech. It is the soldier, not the agitator, who has given us the freedom to protest.
Democratic Senator Zell Miller delivers the keynote address at the Republican National Convention. He blasts John Kerry, endorses President Bush, and crashing the party as Dick Cheney accepts the vice presidential nomination and unlikely an uninvited guest at the party. Democracy Now! Takes famed writer Arundhati Roy inside the Republican National Convention.
Yeah, I was saying that it was so overwhelmingly sort of blonde and white and, you know, kind of, it was like many, many Barbie dolls with one brain kind of wound up and clockwork reactions to things.
We also speak with a protester arrested during the Republican convention. He's just released from what some are calling Guantanamo on the Hudson.
Hi, Amy. We were walking from the World Trade Center in the shadow of the new Freedom Tower towards the Republican convention when the police swooped in and cordoned us off with an orange fence and started arresting people.
All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now! Breaking with Convention, War, Peace in the Presidency, the Battle for New York. I'm Amy Goodman. At the Republican National Convention last night, Democratic Senator Zell Miller and Vice President Dick Cheney lashed out at John Kerry, accusing him of being unfit to be president. Cheney said for 20 years, Kerry's repeatedly made the wrong call on major national security issues. Miller attacked not just Kerry, but his own Democratic Party. He said the party's manic obsession with bringing down Bush is tearing apart the country and making it weaker. In news from the streets of New York, police are now saying they've arrested about 1,100 people Tuesday during the mass direct action protests. This brings the total to about 1,800 people over the last week. By comparison, 600 people were arrested during the historic 1968 Democratic Convention in Chicago. Yesterday, a dozen members of ACT UP New York were arrested inside Madison Square Garden after they disrupted a presentation by White House Chief of Staff Andrew Card. Two members of Code Pink were later arrested during Vice President Dick Cheney's speech. Their pink shirts said Halliburton. The day began when demonstrators formed a three-mile-long symbolic unemployment line that stretch from Wall Street to Madison Square Garden. More protests scheduled today to coincide with President Bush's acceptance of the party's nomination. United for Peace and Justice has called for an 8 p.m. demonstration in Union Square. Meanwhile, President Bush arrived in New York last night and watched the convention with firefighters in an Italian-American community center in Queens. He also accepted the endorsement of the Uniform Firefighters Association of Greater New York. This is more than 10,000 union activists protested outside the Republican National Convention late yesterday. One of the keynote speeches there was the star of The Sopranos. In Iraq, U.S. forces killed up to 20 Iraqis in a bombing raid in a residential area of Fallujah. At least three children were killed in the attack. The Pentagon claimed the strike targeted two safe houses of wanted members of the Iraqi resistance. The Israeli Deputy Defense Minister warned today Israel should consider attacking targets in Syria in response to the suicide bus bombing that killed 16 people. This, according to a report in Haaretz, the Israeli government has attempted to link Tuesday's bombing to Hamas leaders living in Syria. Meanwhile, at the United Nations, the U.S. and France put forward a Security Council resolution yesterday demanding 20,000 Syrian troops immediately withdraw from Lebanon Lebanon and for Syria not to meddle in upcoming elections in Lebanon. The resolution threatens unspecified, quote, additional measures against Syria if it doesn't comply. The Washington Post reporting that the FBI has been investigating whether AIPAC, that's the American-Israel Political Action Committee, helped to illegally pass on highly classified intelligence from the National Security Agency to the Israeli government. According to the Washington Post, the FBI has been investigating AIPAC for 2 years, and that the probe extends well beyond the role of Pentagon analyst Larry John Franklin. Franklin is the Pentagon's top Iran analyst and is suspected of spying for Israel. In Colorado, a judge has dismissed the rape charge against basketball star Kobe Bryant after prosecutors said the woman who alleged she had been raped would not testify against the basketball star. She has said she's received death threats. In Florida, nearly 500,000 people have been ordered to evacuate their homes ahead of Hurricane Frances. This comes just weeks after the devastating Hurricane Charley. In election news, President Bush's campaign filed a lawsuit yesterday to force five liberal organizations to stop running TV commercials. The Bush campaign claims the so-called 527 groups are illegally coordinating their efforts with Kerry's campaign. The groups include MoveOn.org, Media Fund, and America Coming Together. The New York Times is reporting Warner Brothers has decided not to distribute director David O. Russell's new anti-war documentary when it re-releases his 1999 Gulf War movie Three Kings this fall. The studio said the anti-war documentary is, quote, totally inappropriate for a political season. It features interviews with Iraqi refugees and veterans of the current war in Iraq.
War, 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 in the east and in the west. War, 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 they're putting that to the test. I says war, 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 in the east and in the west. War, 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 they're putting that to the test. Hey, can somebody tell me what we're fighting for? Oh yeah, somehow I just don't know. Hey, they're killing the children in their crazy war. Well, give them a chance so they can grow. If you bomb me and I bomb you, only the bomb is gonna make it through. If you bomb me and I bomb you, only the bomb is gonna make it through. War, 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 in the east and in the west.
Democracy Now!, Breaking with Convention. War, Peace, and the Presidency. Yes, we're talking about the battle for New York. I'm Amy Goodman here with Juan Gonzalez.
And welcome to all of you out there. President George W. Bush has arrived in New York ahead of his speech tonight at the Republican National Convention, where he will officially accept the party's nomination as the Republican presidential nominee. He is staying at the Waldorf Astoria Hotel, and his arrival in this fortified city comes as Bush, according to some national polls, is gaining support against his rival Senator John Kerry following a three-day, six-state campaign swing. Last night, he addressed a gathering of New York firefighters in Queens and picked up the endorsement of the city's Firefighters Union, one of the few labor unions supporting the president. At the same time, the Fire Officers Union, a smaller union, announced they were backing John Kerry. Firefighters in Queens chanted, quote, four more years as Bush and his wife Laura arrived on the scene. Video of Bush accepting the endorsement of the Uniformed Firefighters Association of Greater New York was broadcast in the Madison Square Garden Convention Center Hall as Republican delegates cheered.
As President Bush spoke in Queens, his number two man was on the offensive. Last night, Vice President Dick Cheney formally accepted the nomination to run for another four-year term. A good part of his speech was devoted to attacking John Kerry. For their part, the Democrats blasted last night's session, quote, a night of angry old men. They noted Cheney attacked Kerry 30 times, mentioning him by name 14 times, but mentioned the word job just twice. And one mention was in connection with his own job as vice president. Here are some of what Vice President Dick Cheney said last night at the Republican National Convention.
Senator Kerry also takes a different view when it comes to supporting our military. Although he voted to authorize force against Saddam Hussein, he then decided he was opposed to the war and voted against funding for our men and women in the field. He voted against body armor, ammunition, fuel, spare parts, armored vehicles, extra pay for hardship duty, and support for military families. Senator Kerry is campaigning for the position of Commander-in-Chief. Yet he does not seem to understand the first obligation of a Commander-in-Chief, and that is to support American troops in combat. In his years in Washington, John Kerry has been one of 100 votes in the United States Senate. And fortunately, on matters of national security, his views rarely prevailed. But the presidency is an entirely different proposition. A senator can be wrong for 20 years without consequence to the nation. But a president always casts the deciding vote. And in this time of challenge, America needs and America has a president we can count on to get it right.
Vice President Dick Cheney speaking last night at the Republican National Convention here in New York. While Cheney was the center of attention last night, it was a Democrat who got the most enthusiastic response from the delegates inside Madison Square Garden.
Georgia Senator Zell Miller has broken with his party and endorsed President Bush. In his speech, he launched a scathing attack on John Kerry for his criticism of the Vietnam War and his various positions on the invasion of Iraq. Here is Georgia Democrat Senator Zell Miller.
Motivated more by partisan politics than by national security, today's Democratic leaders see America as an occupier, not a liberator. And nothing makes this Marine matter than someone calling American troops occupiers rather than liberators. Tell that. Tell that to the one half of Europe that was free because Franklin Roosevelt led an army of liberators, not occupiers. Tell that to the lower half of the Korean Peninsula that is free because Dwight Eisenhower commanded an army of liberators, not occupiers. Tell that to the half a billion men, women, and children who are free today from Poland to Siberia because Ronald Reagan rebuilt a military of liberators, not occupiers. Never in the history of the world has any soldier sacrificed more for the freedom and liberty of total strangers than the American soldier. And our soldiers don't just give freedom abroad. They preserve it for us here at home. For it has been said so truthfully that it is the soldier, not the reporter, who has given us the freedom of the press. It is the soldier, not the poet, who has given us freedom of speech. It is the soldier, not the agitator, who has given us the freedom to protest. It is the soldier who salutes the flag, serves beneath the flag, whose coffin is draped by the flag, who gives that protester the freedom he abuses to burn that flag. No one should dare to even think about being the commander-in-chief of this country if he doesn't believe with all his heart that our soldiers are liberators abroad and defenders of freedom at home. But don't waste your breath telling that to the leaders of my party today. In their warped way of thinking, America is the problem, not the solution. They don't believe there's any real danger in the world except that which America brings upon itself through our clumsy and misguided foreign policy.
That was Democratic Senator Zell Miller of Georgia speaking last night at the Republican National Convention in New York, endorsing President Bush to be president again. When we returned from our break, we brought some unlikely spectators into the floor of the Republican convention, and they responded to the speeches that they saw and the festival around them. We'll be speaking with Arundhati Roy. Stay with us. This is Democracy Now!, breaking with convention, war, peace, and the presidency, the battle for New York, democracynow.org. We are broadcasting on over 240 stations around the country, on Pacifica radio stations, on NPR stations, on public access TV stations, on PBS, and on both satellite networks, on Free Speech TV on Dish Network, channel 9415, and on DirecTV, channel 375 Link TV. Well, yes, Georgia Democrat Senator Zell Miller and Vice President Dick Cheney spoke last night at the Madison Square Garden during the Republican National Convention. While Miller and Cheney were speaking, a pair of unlikely spectators were sitting in the stands at Madison Square Garden. The famed writer Arundhati Roy, author of, among other books, The God of Small Things, and Ashwin Desai, a community activist and researcher from Durban, South Africa. His latest book is We Are the Poors, Community Struggles in Post-Apartheid South Africa. Democracy Now! Invited the pair into the convention to get their view on the spectacle. At about 8 p.m. last night, Democracy Now! Producer Jeremy Scahill, filmmaker Rick Rowley, and I walked into Madison Square Garden with Arundhati Roy and Ashwin Desai. Here is the story.
Because it's a bit like being in a cult, a place where there's some kind of chanting which veered between chilling and corny. So I'm still confused about which one it was, but I'm sure it was actually chilling, because to be in a place which is where there were rich richest and most powerful people in the world meet to plot the next war, the next massacre, the next bombing. And they look like everybody else, you know? It's not exactly like...
What is your name?
My name is Veronica Mosey.
Where are you from?
I'm from Brooklyn, New York.
And are you a delegate?
No. I'm just a voter who decided to come in and see the Republican National.
What did you think?
I thought it was good. You know, Cheney's a little, come on now. He's not the best. I wanted to see Arnold, to be honest with you, but had to see Cheney. But I thought it was awesome. I think people need to recognize that the Republican Party is about being free and expressing your opinion and thinking what you want and disagreeing or agreeing, but being for a tough president. So let's go for it.
What did you think of the invasion of Iraq?
I think it was necessary. I think we were threatened. I think that I had a brother who was in the first Gulf War, and he saw a lot of stuff out there that people didn't see, women being gutted open and raped and what have you by Saddam's forces, and a lot of people don't, that stuff isn't publicized. So I thought it was interesting that he knew about that stuff, but nobody else did. I think that sometimes the media doesn't publicize things that need to be seen. So it's just my opinion, but, you know, it's what I saw. So interesting. I don't know. I think it's good that we got Saddam. You know, he's no longer a threat, and there we go. I don't know what to tell you.
Do you think we're out of there now?
No, I don't. I think we should pull out. I don't know. It's kind of an iffy stance on my part, but that's just, you know.
Do you think John Kerry represents a different position than George Bush on that?
I think John Kerry, unfortunately, too much for me, is a bit of a wimp. I think John Kerry, I wouldn't feel secure with a commander-in-chief who's like, I don't like war.
Hi, where are you from?
From San Antonio.
San Antonio. What are your names?
Billy Jack and Therese Harlow.
Are you delegates?
I'm an alternate delegate.
And what did you think tonight?
I thought Vice President Cheney was awesome. Sure did.
What most impressed you?
I think his articulation of the facts and George Bush's convictions and John Kerry's convictions. I think he showed very concisely the differences.
What are the differences?
You know him as well as I do. The differences are George Bush is really for the people. John Kerry is for whatever people are telling him what to be for that moment.
Do you think that George Bush and John Kerry are that different in their attitudes to the invasion and occupation of Iraq?
You watching the same TV I am? I'm guessing you might not be, because there's a huge difference. John Kerry changes from whoever's interviewing him to whoever's interviewing him. I don't change, and my president doesn't change.
What do you watch?
I'm sorry?
What do you watch?
I watch Fox News. I don't know what you guys watch. I watch MSNBC, too. I watch Joe Scarborough, watch Chris Matthews sometimes, but mostly Fox. And that's about all of the TV I can stand. It's just a little bit of the news.
Do you think it was a good idea to invade Iraq?
As far as Billy Jack Harlow is concerned, I think that the whole world is better off because we invaded Iraq.
Last question. Have you seen Fahrenheit 9/11?
Not gonna see it. Not only have I not seen it, I have no intention of seeing it. I think Michael Moore is despicable. He's a disgrace to Americanism completely. And only because, not because of who he is or anything, but he represents that movie. And I've seen bits and cuts on the TV. But because he represents it as truth, and it's so far from the truth. I saw him on Bill O'Reilly talking, asking Bill if he would send his sons. Would you send your son? He's an idiot.
You know, the man says that he only watches Fox News. So that explains everything, doesn't it? I mean, you really come to the heart of jingoism, you know, and then you understand why these things can only be resolved through war, in a way, or they try to resolve them through war, because it's so terrifying to see the product of lies, of the media's lies, the American media's lies. And you almost feel you can't even get angry or dislike him, because you just see him as a victim of propaganda, you know, sort of the most foolish kind, but so powerful, so rich, so deadly. You can hardly even engage in an argument, because it's not he didn't want to see Fahrenheit 9/11. He's not curious about it. It's not that he's open to looking at something and changing. He didn't want to see it, you know?
When you walked in to the big arena, what were your thoughts?
Well, my thoughts were just that kind of this power and fundamentalism comes in so many different garbs, you know? Like, I think that if I were to walk into the... If I had walked into the BJP convention in India, you know, where all the right-wing Hindu groups gathered, I would have actually feared for my life, you know? I would have actually worried, because those people there, among them, could be real killers who have personally killed with their hands, you know. And here you have a much more rarefied space where everything appears so civilized, you know. It's like everybody stepped out of some Hollywood film. And somehow that's even more chilling to me, the fact that you're so powerful that you can even be nice, you know, and kill at long distance, bomb at long distance, use your proxies. After all, the right wing in my country are their proxies in some sense, you know. So it's frightening and formidable, and, you know, you really have to, all of us, understand that we're up against the most rich and powerful people in the world, and all we have is our convictions, really, you know, because we don't have the money or the power or the weapons. But I think the anger is more than, I mean, the anger of billions of people is the weapon that will eventually be used against them.
In an unusual situation, you heard a Democrat, Georgia Senator Zell Miller, as well as Republicans, because they invited him to this convention. What were your thoughts about what he had to say?
Sort of the theatrics of betrayal and so on, you know, the cheap drama of that. I'm not somebody who's astounded by that, since politicians do that all the time. I've seen it happen time and again, you know, everywhere, not just here, obviously. But I think what's important about that speech was that it really shows you how the exits are being sealed in the rhetoric of democracy today. You know, that it's come to a space where it's really interesting that you know, the Democrats are in a space where they have to eventually, whether they lose or win the elections, they are going to have to prove that they are more vicious, more warmongering, more hard than the Republicans. They don't even have as much space to maneuver as the Republicans do. You know, it's really very, very interesting thing. And say in India, on the issue of Kashmir, which is an occupied territory, the fact is that the equivalent of the Democrats, the Congress, have much less room to maneuver because the BJP will always overturn them on that by being really right-wing. So, you know, in terms of an analysis of power, I think this simple thing about, you know, the Democrats are slightly better or the lesser evil and things is quite dangerous, because you saw that speech and it just closes the space for any kind of softness, you know. So Kerry is going to have to prove himself to be, in my terms, worse than Bush, you know. And then, of course, the talk about now what is soft imperialism, that you're going to have the support of the UN and Europe to rape Iraq some more and to take on some other countries, you know. Is that better or worse for us in the third world? I don't know. I don't know what the answer to that is. But I think it was quite a wonderful display of how little space is left in this kind of electoral democracy now. And that's the issue that all of us have to face, that how much expediency can we afford? You know, when are we going to say that actually this is not a debate that interests us? This is not where public power will be exercised, or the power of a dissenting public.
When I looked around at the convention, clearly, you know, 98% of the delegates there were white. And what historical analogy can I draw but to the final kind of days of apartheid, where the national party was in power, would have the same kind of complexion. But I also got a party, the Republican Party, almost like this kind of the National Party in South Africa at home, having been a party of white supremacy in the end, and a party that has just wreaked so much of bloodshed and havoc and evil in the world. Like this was a party, its descendants was a party of slavery, it's a party of carpet bombing, but the same kind of smugness. And similarly, the National Party, you know, which not only destabilized and killed and maimed and butchered in South Africa, but in the southern African states, destabilizing campaigns. And when I had an opportunity to go to one of their congresses as a reporter, it just had the same kind of smugness, the same kind of amnesia, that in the, you know, that it does rankle. It does, when they raise the issue that Reagan saw the pulling down of the Berlin Wall. You know, this is a party, despite the protestations, which overseeing the development of an apartheid wall in Israel that is going to cut, you know, but they can't see that. Maybe they don't want to see that. And so it's a party, I still think, of white power, you know, and if this was a time right now, and was a time for a transition from apartheid to democracy in South Africa, the whites of South Africa would have got a much better deal. They would have got through the power of America and the resurgence of a kind of white civilized supremacy attitude, they would have probably got guaranteed seats in a parliament. It's a time. It's that kind of time once again, and that is scary, because it also involves the rolling back of so many gains that people have made across the world in their own way through blood and struggle. And this party and Bush and the new presidency is overseeing a lot of those rollbacks of those kinds of things. And just the complete living in a kind of almost bounded, enclosed empire, the complete lack of empathy for the kind of the history of this nation and what it has done, still maintaining a kind of rhetoric of, you know, we bring freedom and we bring liberation. And that was very haunting about what the Democrat guy said, that the people who deliver freedom are soldiers. You know, the people who deliver the vote are soldiers. I wonder if he came from a country like I came from, which lived under the in front of the barrel of a soldier, whether he'd be saying the same things. It's ridiculous because it also is a precursor to the soldiers once again becoming hegemonic, even in a country like America with its constitution and so on. And that was probably the most scary moment. It was even more scary than Cheney's speech.
And what did you think of Cheney's speech?
I thought, well, firstly, you know, I don't know much about Dick Cheney. You know, in all our anti-war marches at home in South Africa, you know, the links between his with Halliburton, the fact that he personally, you know, will gain so much from a war, that these guys are involved in shady deals. These guys are not people to be respected. They merge kind of the ability to serve in the state apparatus while having private interests, which is something that's an anathema to real democracy. Sleazy, sly, chilling, a warmonger, because warmonger suits his private interests. That all came across. His humor was crude, as probably his politics are, and his ways accumulate his own wealth. So that's really scary for the rest of the world to know the kind of incredible lack of ability to think through an issue. You know, I mean, this play on, you know, he said, what George Bush thinks on Saturday night, I think, he will think again once on Sunday. It's a time in the world where you would expect the leaders of this new empire to have a certain amount of flexibility, to maybe rethink things.
That man who you were interviewing with the hat, I was just telling Jeremy that to me he was like an egg. You know, this smooth person who didn't have any doubts about anything because Fox News had sorted that all out for him. But if you just took him from this context and put him on a street in almost anywhere else in the world except for America, he would just break. He would just, everything, he would be devastated, not by violence, but just by an understanding that he couldn't have imagined possible, you know? Very fragile. You felt almost sorry for the man. I was interested in two things. One is that at the World Social Forum in Porto Alegre in 2003, and in Mumbai this year, there were many more people than this. Huh? The stadiums were packed with people, with flags, and on the march day before yesterday, you know, the 500,000 people here, a lot of people complained about the fact that, you know, there wasn't a rally and there weren't speeches and there wasn't, you know, the taking over Central Park. I have never marched in America before, and I was very thrilled by the fact that there wasn't that, you know. I was very thrilled by the fact that there was such a diversity of coming people coming together, many of whom one didn't necessarily agree with, but everyone was bringing their own joke or their own political insight or their own poster or their own t-shirt into this mass. And here it was almost like automatons, you know, the chants, the, you know, it was like as if their pupils were dilated and they were just like dolls, you know. And I think the fact is that if you're not a journalist, if you're a, you know, if you're a writer or a, you know, person who writes on politics, on activists, who comes from an outside country, you cannot but read this heightened, insane, lying nationalism as a hostility towards everything that you stand for, you know? I mean, I think that's what it was. It was just the antithesis of me. Everything. It was just like amazing to be in a place where it was, you know, for you it was what hell on earth would be to be in that, or to have to deal with that. We have to deal with it, but, you know, just physically contain yourself there. It was so overwhelmingly sort of blonde and white and, you know, kind of, it was like many, many Barbie dolls with one brain kind of wound up and clockwork reactions to things. I said yesterday when you asked me whether I would come that I was cheap enough to just want to see how it felt to be in the same room as people that you've despised and raged against for so long, you know? And I must say it was not awesome, you know, to see. I just thought that the people, the activists who come in here and have the courage to disrupt this in the heart of it are the really awesome people, you know. To watch Dick Cheney repeat the lies about the, you know, the dangers and the nuclear materials being traded and the terror and the national security, you just want to say, ho hum, okay, more of the same, you know, pass the sauce or whatever.
I was very interested that the kind of symbol is an elephant. And I came in thinking it was an African elephant. African elephants can't be tamed or domesticated. It's actually an Indian elephant. This party can be tamed. It can be tamed and domesticated and can be beaten into doing tricks for other people rather than forcing other people to do tricks for it. Around. Indian elephants can be tamed and African elephants can't. Indian buffaloes can be tamed, African buffaloes can't be tamed. That's the truth.
Much better. Africans are good, Indians are bad. No, you can only tell by the ears. Ashwin's ears, for example, are the ears of an African elephant. Mine, on the other hand, are the ears of Mahatma Gandhi, who's like an African elephant. No fooling.
Whose political philosophy was to be part of the empire, or be an equal part.
We're just fooling you. But I wanted to say, when you asked that question about somebody saying whether everybody on earth should vote for the American president, I think, I would feel misrepresented if I thought that I had gone on air in America saying that the, you know, to me, being in the Republican convention was like being in hell on earth. Because I don't think I'd feel that different at the Democratic convention, you know? And the fact is that for the rest of the world, for those of us who are in India and South Africa and so on, it is quite frightening that if you think of Kerry as president coming and deepening the penetration of the American multinationals in India, or, you know, Bill Clinton rolling across Africa with Oprah Winfrey and throwing stuffed toys at people while your privatization is happening, while pipelines are being laid, while water and electricity is being cut, it's actually very frightening. The idea of this kind of consensus, you know, so the choice between whether you want a stupid emperor or a megalomaniacal emperor or a suaver, gentler one isn't an easy choice for us, you know. So for us to vote in the American elections is a ridiculous idea, because we are opposing the American empire, not wanting to be co-opted into it.
Arundhati Roy, author of God of Small Things, her latest book, An Ordinary Person's Guide to Empire, along with Ashwin Desai. His latest book is We Are the Poor's Community Struggles in Post-Apartheid South Africa. Arundhati Roy had come in from India, and Ashwin Desai from Durban, South Africa. This is Democracy Now! As they took in the Republican National Convention last night in Madison Square Garden. Sitting in the garden as Democratic Senator Zell Miller and Republican Vice President Dick Cheney addressed the convention. When we come back, we go to the protests in the streets, to the March for Women's Lives in Central Park, and the March on the Media, led by FAIR, Paper Tiger, and other groups. And we'll find out what's happened with the more than 1,700 protesters in jail. Stay with us. This is Democracy Now!, Breaking with Convention, War, Peace. Breaking with Convention, War, Peace, and the Presidency, the Battle for New York. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. There has been organized, permitted protests and many direct actions throughout New York. Close to 1,800 people have been arrested. Yesterday, there was a march from 7 to 9 in the evening New York time from CBS to CNN to Fox News once again. Thousands of people gathered to march on the media in an event sponsored by Paper Tiger and FAIR. That's Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting. One of the founders of FAIR is Jeff Cohen. He spoke last night.
When Donahue was terminated as the war was approaching, Donahue's terminated and a memo leaks out from NBC that was never supposed to get public. It said that Donahue represents, quote, a difficult public face for NBC in a time of war. He seems to delight in presenting guests who are anti-war, anti-Bush, and skeptical of the administration's motives, unquote. This was a problem for NBC. I always understood that journalism in a free society meant that you presented skeptics and critics of the powers that be. That's not the case. You want to hear skeptics and critics of the powers that be, you listen to Democracy Now! On Pacifica. If you think you can get real news from the mainstream media, that's not what you're getting. NBC's memo that was never supposed to get out, it went on to describe a nightmare scenario.
Thousands of women rallied in City Hall Park. Right now, though, we turn to Donna Lieberman in that march last night, the rally for women's lives.
We're here today to send a message to our entire country and to the world that New York and everybody who's come to New York for these protests is for women. We oppose the policies of this administration that would destroy our fundamental right to control our bodies. And we oppose the attack on the whole range of civil liberties and civil rights that has been the trademark of this administration. And we're not some fringe lunatics. We are the people. We are the mainstream of America. We're here to tell our president and his sidekicks, be they Cheney or Ashcroft, to stop playing politics with women's health, to get big government out of our bedroom, to butt out of our decisions about whether or whom to marry, and to keep his religion to himself.
And that was Donna Lieberman at the rally for women's lives last night in Central Park. That took place just after the major union rally took place just below Madison Square Park, Juan.
Yes, about 15,000 union members from a variety of New York City unions turned out. They heard speakers, John Sweeney, the president of the AFL-CIO, and many other union leaders. They focused extensively on the anti-labor record of the Bush administration and the all-out importance of getting union members out to vote. We'll listen to Roger Toussaint, the president of the Transport Workers Union, who spoke at that rally.
Brothers and sisters, George Bush has come to New York to claim the mantle of September 11th. Well, we transit workers were at the World Trade Center on September 11th. 2,000 to 4,000 of our members worked on the pile. And World Trade Center rescue and recovery effort worked as an example and a symbol of cooperation, solidarity, and selflessness. It worked well. But they do not appreciate why it worked well. When Giuliani spoke at their convention on Monday night, he talked about how he loved construction workers, but he neglected to point out that these construction workers were union men and women. The rescue and recovery effort worked well because it was union men and women on the pile. Because unions teach us cooperation, togetherness, and solidarity. And that's the very opposite of the Bush agenda. The very opposite. And that's why the rescue and recovery effort worked well. And that's also why we are furious that George Bush dare come to New York to claim the mantle of September 11th and the World Trade Center. Furious because of how he has treated all of us, whether it was the uniformed, whether it's construction and trades or transit workers. Furious because we worked round the clock and now George Bush is trying to take away overtime pay. Furious because Giuliani lied to us about the poisons and the toxins that were in the air that we were breathing in. Furious because they refused to even give us a fair shake with respect to disability claims as a result of the work on the pile. Furious because they shortchanged us on rebuilding money. They shortchanged New York on Homeland Security money. Shortchanged New York on education money. You are furious. Furious because George Bush prefers to give money to Wyoming, North and South Dakota, Texas. Furious because he prefers to take money away, even away from the hunt for Bin Laden, instead to use the money to go after oil in Iraq. And I'm speaking here as a parent who has a son in the military, and I'm furious because my son may have to shed blood for oil as a result of George Bush's policy. And we're furious that George Bush dared to come to the scene of his crimes to claim the mantle of the towers. We are furious. Transit workers are furious. And we join with all workers and all labor in saying, labor cannot stand 4 more years of George Bush. George Bush must go. George Bush must go. George Bush must go. George Bush.
That was Roger Toussaint, president of Local 100 of the Transport Workers Union, at the big labor rally against President Bush and the Republicans yesterday afternoon outside Madison Square Garden. Well, the protest against the Republican convention continued yesterday throughout New York City. The police arrested 19 people in separate incidents, bringing the total of those detained so far during 7 days of relentless convention-related protests to more than 1,760, a record for a political convention. Hundreds of people protested the conditions under which those arrested are being held before going to court, saying the site, which is at a pier on the Hudson River, was contaminated with oil and asbestos. Pier 57 is a three-story block-long pier that has been converted to a holding pen. New York City Mayor Michael Bloomberg has denied the city was operating what some called Guantanamo on the Hudson. And he defended the use of the pier garage, saying, quote, it's not supposed to be Club Med.
Yesterday at the union rally, I spoke with a representative of the Transit Workers Union that Roger Toussaint heads, and he said that they long used it as a bus depot in Lower Manhattan, but there was a major fire there about 10 years ago, and they couldn't finish the asbestos abatement, and it really hasn't been used for human beings in all of this time. Now more than 1,000 people have been held there. Last night, a judge ordered protesters who've been held for 24 hours released with desk appearance tickets if they weren't charged with serious crimes. Before midnight, some protesters started emerging from 100 Center Street, which is just around the corner from our firehouse studio. Some 200 supporters greeted them with cheers, offered food and medical treatment. Despite the judge's orders, a large number of protesters remain imprisoned. Matt DeLazio just got out of jail yesterday afternoon, a member of the New York Catholic Worker arrested at Ground Zero. What were you doing at Ground Zero?
Well, I mean, we were trying to dramatize the effects of Bush's preemptive foreign policy, and we ended up being preempted by the New York City police in a policy of preemptive arrests.
And so you marched from Ground Zero to remember the dead after 9/11 in Afghanistan and Iraq, and they arrested you before the action even took place?
About 3 minutes into our walk, we were stopped by a line of police, surrounded by police on bicycles, and then we were wrapped in an orange fence and told we were under arrest. It was a large net they cast. We had a Republican delegate in with us, many members of the media, and within 2 hours, there were over 250 people arrested.
Now, this is after you had negotiated with police to actually start the march, right? And they had given you the go-ahead.
Correct. They gave us the go-ahead, and we were proceeding, trying not to block any traffic, which we were successful in until the police stopped us, at which point the crowd swelled and they surrounded us and told us we were blocking traffic.
What was it like at Pier 57?
Pier 57 was sort of a rough scene. There was oil on the floor. There were these large pens. By the time we got there, around 6:30 p.m., all the pens started to fill. For about 4 hours, there was a constant flow of buses coming in nonstop with people coming off. The spirits among the activists were very high. A lot of cheering for people coming in. At the same time, we were trying to deal with the conditions we were in. Some people were experiencing rashes from sitting on the floor, the residue of oil that was on the floor.
Well, we want to thank you for being in right now and welcome out Matt DeLazio of the Catholic Worker. We'll continue to follow the story, of course. Again, close to 1,800 people have been arrested in the last week. Today, there will be a court hearing this morning just after this broadcast ends, and we'll bring you the latest tomorrow. That does it for our program. I'll be in Asheville, North Carolina on Friday night, on Saturday night in Harrisonburg. We have 30 seconds. 10 seconds. Dan Cashin, our cameraman, is on the air up at Grand Central. You have 10 seconds, Dan. Okay, what happened there? He's just broken up. The police have taken him. There's been an ACT-UP protest there and a major banner hang. People are being arrested as we speak. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Thanks for joining us.